Welcome to Pax Europiana. This one is now the podcast, the series about European Slovenia. This is, of course, a country very dear to my heart. I'm from Austria, and it's in a way the southern twin of Austria. We have been for, well, I don't know, since the Roman times living in the same imperial governance structure, with the exception and with the ending in this crazy year of 1918. And since 2004, we are again united in the European Union. And that's very good so, because Austria and Slovenia are very similar countries. I guess when you are listening here from, let's say, America or China or India, and you drive today from Vienna to Ljubljana, you won't really recognize a lot of differences, yeah? Maybe it's a bit more sunny on this sunny side of the Alps. They have these slogans in the 19th, the Slovenian Tourism Agency. And it was very galling for me and my, us Austrians, because that supposes that we are on the dark side of the Alps, where the sun is not shining for us. But okay, good. We also have a lot of sun, and we also are a beautiful country, and it's also a tourist magnet of the world, Austria. But Slovenia, true, it's more in the south. It has wonderful lakes. It has wonderful skiing opportunities. It is also with a short part of the Adriatic coast. Unfortunately, still a bit contentious with the Croatian friends. But I hope there will be arbitration for that one as well. It's always complicated when states break up, and then the borders must be defined. The common assets must be clarified. And obviously that was the case very hard in 1918, 1919. And it was also the same then in 89 and 1991, when the two major changes in the Slovenian history of lasting effect have happened. This was the leaving the Austrian-Hungarian monarchy, where Slovenia was part of the Austrian part. And then this was a big shock, obviously, leaving the Austrian customs currency union, which Slovenia and present-day Slovenia was really, I guess, since the Roman times, I said it already, it was part of this southern, south of the Danube. The moment the Roman Empire reached the Danube in Vienna, obviously, that was all part of one province, or maybe it was two provinces, but it was part of the Roman Empire, and there was not a big difference between Austria and Slovenia. And today, maybe to share this impression of mine, I was the first time as an Austrian student leader then in Slovenia. I think it was in 94, and I gave a seminar to the Slovenian partner organizations we had, and it was about election planning, student representation, and this kind of activities. And, you know, I felt like at home. The people looked like Austrians. There is so much similarity in the outlook of the people, that just the language is different. And by the way, we in Austria have also Slovenian as a recognized minority language in the south, in Austria, in Carinthia. And that's one of our federal states. And we make sometimes also the joke that they are like our Slovenia. But obviously this was one region, this region of Krajn, of Carinthia, of Slovenia. This was one part of the empire ruled under one baron. And it is very much interlinked in history. It always was. And the borders were very difficult to be drawn after the end of the First World War. And after the Second World War, after both World Wars, the questions of the borders between Austria and Slovenia were contentious. It was very complicated. There was the question of the self-determination of the people along very difficult to draw ethnic lines. And then there were two referendums, or one referendum was done in the south of Austria. But actually the minority areas in Austria, where the most of the Slovenes lived, they also voted to stay in Austria, because it was not so different for them. It was not that they have changed their land, in a sense. They were living in Austria anyhow, and they were a little bit dubious about the idea to be run by Belgrade. I want to explain again, I have in several podcasts already, that the reason why Yugoslavia has developed, it was of course an idea already in the 19th century to build a federation of the southern Slav countries, but that was a minority in Slovenia and in Croatia. In reality, the lost war gave not a lot of other options to the southern Slavs in the Austrian Empire, because all of the Austrian Empire fell in its ethnic fragments. That's why today still actually Austrian Parliament is officially not called Parliament, but it's called Nationalrat, the Council of the Nation, of the German nation in a sense. Of course, we don't say German nation, don't get me wrong, today. But at that time, the state was called, also the Austrian state was called German Austria and Nationalrat of the German-speaking people. That was the idea. Same for the Czechoslovakians, the Polish got their own states, the Hungarians, and so on and so on. And in the south, there was the choice, obviously. You can stay in Austria, but that was not really the logical choice. And there was no army anymore in Austria. Everything was dissolving. You can be overrun by the Italians, or you can be allied with the Serbs. And obviously nobody knew how that will be in Yugoslavia. They didn't know how it will turn out, yeah? And that was obviously what they didn't want, is to be with the Italians, because they knew exactly what the Italians had in mind for them. That was ethnic expulsion, basically the status of slavery and oppression, immigration to Latin America, and genocide. Yeah? That was the Italian offer for the Slovenians. Yeah, and obviously they didn't want that. If you question that, see also the fate of the Slovenians in the biggest Slovenian city of that time, in Trieste. It was Austrian-Hungarian city, obviously, or Slovenian city, or Italian city. You cannot make the difference in this time so much. It was governed by the Austrian-Hungarian Empire. There was mixed population. Italians got it by the end of the World War. And then they mistreated the Slovenian residents very badly. And this would have happened to all of the Slovenians if Italy would have been the choice. Obviously, then they opted for Yugoslavia, and so it came to be the kingdom of the Croatians, the Slovenians, and the Serbs. And I have already said, not of the Croatians, not of the Montenegrinians, Bosnians, Macedonians, and Kosovo Albanians. They were somehow included as well without asking them too much. There was only one army left in standing, able to defeat and to defend from Italian takeover. That was the Serbian army supplied by the Allies. So then Yugoslavia was born on the 1st of December 1918. So now, good, that's the history now. Don't worry what I... it's now anyhow gone. In 89, there was the breakup of Yugoslavia, and also Slovenia developed in courageous leadership of very important European personality, which is today a bit contentious, and I would like to also defend him for his historic role, Mr. Janša, who is not the darling of the liberal left of Europe, to be at least, but he is a real freedom hero for Slovenia and for all who love freedom. I respect him very much. He has really contributed decisively to the defeat of the Yugoslav army in the 10 Days War. And he is also one of the key fathers of the independence of Slovenia. Obviously, the transition of Slovenia was very specific. It is a very specific case in European history, because it was a mix of the resistance and opposition figures like Janša and also Petale, but also the Slovenian Yugoslav establishment. They wanted as well to break away. And this kind of informal big coalition between the Slovenian communist establishment wanting to break away and the opposition figures, this kind of uneasy coalition which made independence possible and which also led to a very short war only, because they negotiated and also showed their teeth. Janša showed his teeth to the Yugoslavian army with his as Minister of Defense, and the Slovenian Socialists negotiated, and so basically they somehow were not as harmed as Croatia, Bosnia, Kosovo, all the others. And also because the Serbian nationalism never had these pretensions of including Slovenia in its ethnic concept of Greater Serbia. Also, it was very far, too far away for them to project power above the heads of Croatia into Slovenia. That was complicated. And also, as the Slovenians are a bit of a more distinct linguistic and religious group in the Southern Slavs, that was obviously not part of the greater Serbian project. There was no common Byzantine past. There was no common anti-Ottoman fight. There was no kind of feeling of such unity between the Serbs and the Slovenians. And there was also no Serb minority classically living in Slovenia as it was in Croatia, Bosnia, and in other parts of Yugoslavia, in all other parts of Yugoslavia. So that's the reason. And also this uneasy consensus then has led to a very mixed transition in some aspects. Obviously, Slovenia today is close to perfection in the big item issues. Look, it's in NATO since 2004. It's in European Union since 2004. It's in the Eurozone since 2002 as well. And I'm correct, but in the beginning, it was very successful. So all in all, the big item issues in OECD, Schengen, Slovenia is close to perfection. And it's also the most successful economically in GDP per capita. Slovenia, with its unique geographic position between Austria and Italy, is now already at $26,000 GDP net. That's the best in the Eastern Europe. That's better than Czech Republic. That's better than Lithuania. And that's already today better than Greece and Portugal. It's a very successful country. So the transition in this kind of two blocks, the reformed communists and the opposition dissidents of Janša and Petale, has worked very well in the big issues because there was a consensus for the big issues. And it worked. And Slovenia is successful. Unfortunately, there was never a really kind of market transition in this country because the post-communist, the whole establishment of Slovenia has transformed itself in two political parties, the liberals and the social democrats, and they have then competed with the third bloc, the democrats, some of them called democrats, nationalists, Christian democrats. It's also varying over the last 30 years, but very much around the key opposition leaders, Petale and Janša. This is the third bloc, if you want, the real pro-market democracies, the real Western European kind of center-right-wing leaders. And they were obviously never fully in power. So what happened? On the big issues, progress, fantastic. On those issues which really then matter for a fast-track transition, that means privatization, that was really not a priority. Because this kind of uneasy coalition, they have not been able to privatize because state companies seem to be in this kind of as well, you know, we are a small country, you know, let's not go too fast. The whole transition of this Yugoslavian economy then to a market economy was done technically very well. So in corporate governance and restructuring and all these things. But the idea of selling something then to Austrians or Italians or Americans, and that was really out of the question for them. And so you have this kind of corporatistic Austrian model, which in Austria I refer to always as the Northern Yugoslavian model. But you can, in the case of Austria, of Slovenia, say, oh, as well, is the Austrian corporatistic model copied one-to-one? Because obviously the Slovenian political and economic elite, they know Austria very well. They immediately saw, you have this kind of state industry, public asset, very good, we copied that one. And then they saw all these things the Austrians do it, how you basically manage an Austrian corporatist, collusive corruption economy without the Brussels and Berlin noting too much. You have to find your own way. Just on the lowest level of compliance with the competition regulation of the European Union, that you never can be really criticized by the DG Competition or the DG ECFIN. You somehow comply as minimal as possible. And in the meantime, you make sure that the leading families of the communist times control the key leverages of corporate economics, judicial power and media power over time. And so you continue your mixed system, Austrian, Slovenian, let's say, some positive mix from Tito Yugoslavia mixed with some Austrian left-wing social democracy, and then you basically do this kind of little bit of a own separate Slovenian mix of it. And then, as always in small economies, and that's always in in all the European small economies, especially in Eastern Europe, you know each other. And of course, you know, in a country of 2 million people, and you know, in one generation where most of them, they were in the communist youth movement, or later they were in the same sports clubs, in the same high schools, because obviously it's all from the main city, the guys. And then their families knew each other. They were in the same churches. They were in the same associations around the university. They had the same experience. So you always can solve something by calling each other. Nobody will know in Brussels. You make collusion, market cartels, corruption, but on a Austrian-Slovenian style, on a kind of Austrian-Hungarian side. So they make the corruption not on this kind of brutal, like the Serbian aggressive with football hooligans, and you send them to break some bones. No. You regulate everything like Austrian-Hungarian gentleman does it, you know. You go to beautiful cafes in Slovenia and you discuss very friendly. You discuss about mutual interests, which could be defined maybe by a consulting agreement, you know, and then you think about the mutual interest and how everybody can benefit in a kind of, and obviously it is a form of corruption, but it's not, it's legalized corruption. Let's put it like this. And it's called collusion. It's this Austrian collusion model, because also in Austria, I don't want to accuse everybody here to be corrupt. But it's the same way of one interest must be respected with the others, you know, and not, of course, you know, not to break any laws, but always to make sure that everybody benefits in this kind of whitewashing, collusive corruption network in a kind of consensus model. Maybe I'm exaggerating, you know, maybe not. Yeah? But what is the real problem? There is a huge level of state ownership in the economy. There is obviously this high level of collusiveness. There is this Austrian-style tax system. To this moment, Slovenia, for example, has a tax rate of 18 and the corporation tax, and a leveled up progressive system like in Germany, like in Austria. They have never reformed the taxation system. And it's just, you know, the most progressive taxation system in Eastern Europe, in Central Europe today. It's the only country which has not significantly worked on its competitiveness, because the idea was not to attract all this foreign capital, but, you know, to stay among each other. It would be really very complicated to have all this American investment and British investment or German investment like in Hungary. And no. It's much better if we, the families, own it all. That is basically the Austrian model all over again. Additionally, and that's a really more serious point, actually, and it's all over Eastern Europe, one of the big problems that in transition economies from communism to democracy and market economy, obviously, politically, it's very clear and easy to reform. Because you make new elections, you vote the other guys in, and then you are a democracy, and then you are market democracy in a way. Yeah? But obviously, in these non-elected parts, in the administration, and especially in the judiciary, the judges and the high court judges, that's often an area where there has not any transition happened. And why is that? It's quite logical, because this is not so much in the attention. The judge is there, before the judge was also there, and afterwards it's the same judge. A judge is also, you know, normally also protected, you cannot dismiss him, he should be there forever. But imagine how they were selected and how they were appointed in communism or socialism. They were obviously fully appointed by the political elite to serve them. In a communist country, there was no independent judiciary. This was just a fake copy of a Western model, which was seen useful in order to have all these theoretical requirements of a democracy. Then you put your guys in, and you then waited for your decision as a party leader, as a secretary general, to tell them what to do. And they were also asking before they somehow made mistakes. Yeah, and this is obviously what the judiciary has stayed. in all Eastern European countries, no exception. The worst, obviously, in Russia, but also in Albania, also in Slovenia, also in Poland. It is an unreformed judiciary. Now, 30 years later, some of the more stricter conservative movements, like in Poland, they try to reverse that, and then they try to gerrymander and to influence the judiciary with their guys. But that's also not the idea that you somehow then fire everybody from the past and get only your guys in, and then you do this kind of system as we have it in Poland and in Hungary. That's not the idea of independent judiciary. And here is also, when you look, for example, the video which Janša has now released on the question of his own case, on Patria case, and also on this transition in the judiciary, he is pretty much right on that. He is correct. It's a problem all over the place. And my approach to it, because knowing that it was a problem also in Kosovo, in Bulgaria, everywhere, it is the same problem, because this judiciary has the, first of all, this is often the same people who were 30 years ago also in the judiciary or in politics or in administration, and they have moved to that sector. It's often very highly lucrative to be there, because you can auction the results off to the highest bidder. Or, if you're a bit smarter, you are part of the political government network, where basically you ensure compliance with the government wishes, and in key judgments, you make sure, especially in the economic decision making, which is so important, that only that happens which is in your circle of friends appreciated. And this is a collusive network in the judiciary, which we have also in Malta, also in Bulgaria, in all the new countries, and by the way, also in Austria. You know, in Austria, obviously, they're more sophisticated, but political control of the judiciary was a feature of the KNK monarchy and of the Ottoman Empire and of the Russian Empire, and we have only gradually improved in the last years. Some countries a bit more, some countries a bit less, but it's and in Italy it's also a problem, no doubt. It's only better in Germany and hopefully in France. I don't know the situation there very well. I guess, yes, in the Benelux countries, they have a better system, but it is a big problem. What I have already called 20 years ago is to build a European judiciary of significance. That means we have European FBI, European public prosecutor, European high court judges, and to do it basically like in the United States, that you federalize at the federal level, you have real power in the judiciary as well, and also in the nomination of the judges and of the key prosecutors. The key prosecutor, the general prosecutor of every single country in Europe, needs to be also confirmed by the European Parliament. Why not? Then at least there is some objectivity, that the guys also feel the pressure that there is somebody watching, and not just their cousin, their friend, their brother, their girlfriend's interests are basically then dominating the judiciary agenda, and who is prosecuted and who not. And especially in political connected key assets decision, you know, we're talking about billions of euros. Also in Slovenia, it's a big economy now. Then obviously the stakes are high, the interests are high, and this judicial system cannot stay independent in such a small country condition. It's an illusion. If we don't Europeanize it, it will never be cleaned up. And it is then obviously leading to a lot of problems for the political reform in these countries, as we see in Malta, in Slovenia, in Bulgaria, in Romania, in Poland, in Hungary. And it's not only that this conservative, or I don't think that Orban is a conservative leader, I don't like him, he's a pro-Russian asset, but Janša is not just him wanting to change the media landscape or the judiciary landscape. In reality, the media landscape and the judiciary landscape of Slovenia and of Austria and of Croatia is highly concentrated in few ownership, is also deeply problematic connected with the judiciary, and obviously they then form the networks. In Slovenia, it seems to be the Forum 21. In Austria, we had famously the Club 45 during the socialist times of Kreisky. But there is various kind of networks then always where they all meet and they decide and the key decisions. Why do you think that Firtash is still not in America? You know, this Ukrainian oligarch who is still today in Vienna and protected from Austrian judiciary system from extradition to the United States. And our chief public prosecutor is suspended today. You know, this is significant in Austria, and it's very credible that this is the same in Slovenia and in Romania and in Bulgaria. And if we don't go for a European judiciary, a significant one, a US style, with Department of Justice, with Supreme Court, with FBI, with real powers for all these federal authorities to prosecute the cases they want and then to bring them to European justice outside of the power grip of the national elites who decide about the futures of their children, of their wives, of their families, of their relatives, who decide about promotions and who are then also maybe influencing financially or by threats of violence all these decisions of the judiciary, then we will never clean up the European system east of whatever the German border and south of the German border. Maybe it's better in Germany. I hope so. I tend to believe so because it's a different tradition and it was reconstructed by America post-Second War, and there was also a different judiciary system. But also Germany, as we all know, has a very difficult past of authoritarian political control justice, and it is not without blame in that one. Good. And this is for Slovenia, I think, a lot already. I want to make advertisement to go there because it's a beautiful country. Huh? It has this beautiful Lake of Bled, and this fantastic cities at the coast, Porto Roche, the harbor of Koper. It is really amazing. And Ljubljana is a fantastic city. It's a beautiful, classical, Austrian-Hungarian, 19th century age of establishment or Gründerzeit, I don't know how you call it, this kind of beautiful buildings there. It's very well renovated. It's already quite expensive to buy there and it's to live there. And it's really fantastic. But what is missing is obviously the political transition. It's obviously also the reform of the judiciary and the taxation system and of the state corporate sector. But, and of that is all very much to blame also in Brussels itself, because the unreformed Western European states have never allowed the development of a real European judiciary. They have always said, we are neutral on the ownership of companies, so you can keep all your Romanian state property, Slovenian state property, Austrian state property, while, because the French also have a lot of state property and also such an economy. The Germans never insisted. The Germans have much less of this, but the Germans got their kind of public care, public welfare provisions in the treaties, meaning that all these Landesbanks can be subsidized and state guaranteed, and all their kind of utility companies can be so much subsidized. And anyhow, they broke down in the great financial crisis and lost a lot of money later. And also then the energy companies are also, many of them now, very much in a complicated situation. And so I think it was utter nonsense to allow this kind of neutrality on state ownership in the European Union, not to force liberalization on the utility sector, because we have all this mess in Slovenia and in Austria, and we had so many expenses because exactly of our inability to reform in a consistent, clear, market-oriented European kind of style and these key sectors. And so collusion, corruption was breeding, especially in the less reformed Eastern European countries, which came new in. And Slovenia is a perfect example of doing all the big things right, so escaping the kind of attention, but in reality breeding this collusive, corruptive situation continuously in the last 30 years. And we never have built these necessary entities in Brussels to really look deeper and reform and insist on reforms. Look, you can also document it in the presidents of Slovenia. Each single of the Slovenian presidents, of the first one for 12 years, Kucan, then Dvorak, then Turk, then Pahor, four presidents now, each of them coming from the communist youth movement, yeah, or being a high-ranking official already in Yugoslavia. You know, it's like this. It's like that, yeah. You can, Madame Turk, maybe a bit less, but he was already in the diplomatic service of Yugoslavia. So this is really, in a way, the last Yugoslavian republic of this kind of softer Yugoslavia of the late 80s, yeah. These are not Milosevic genocidal guys, don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about his kind of Greater Serbia, Yugoslavia, and this kind of total perversion. And I'm also not talking about the brutal state of Tito's in his first phase, because before he came at an American client state in 52, but fully then in 64. From 64 or 65 bankruptcy, Yugoslavia was very much under American influence and de facto also control. And he was much softer in Kosovo and all these issues. No, I'm talking about these 80s, about the Ante Markovic-style reformers. Yeah, these are, he was a Croatian. But these people, they all were his friends and they all were his colleagues or his assistants or his sitting in the Yugoslavian party, so in this collegium of presidents, prime ministers, ministers at that time, or diplomats for Yugoslavia, and they have that kind of school has basically dominated Slovenian politics ever since. Obviously, you know, they have been competing with Janša, but Janša has several times become prime minister. It's the third time he's now prime minister, and it's a very difficult thing, certainly for him to fight here, and he's leading also this kind of nonsensical Twitter debates with whatever he was for Trump, and then he is now having this fight with the with a journalist and with the liberals from the European Parliament. I can just advise him not to do all these nonsensical kind of lost battles, but to focus on Slovenia and try to really do the real reforms, which I have said. Slovenia needs stronger regions like in Austria to be a federal state. Slovenia needs a lower taxation, best 10% flat tax as in Bosnia, as in Macedonia, as in Bulgaria, as it should be also, and it's close to being in Romania. This is the right level. This is the fight to fight, not the fights about the past. The reform of the judiciary is almost impossible. It is not doable to reform the judiciary, and there will be massive controversies. But taxation can be reformed. That is, I think, very simple with a majority in the parliament, easy to do. And also privatization. So the much better way to take economic power away from this kind of socialist collusion system is to privatize the state companies. That can be done with a majority in the government easily. Bam, bam, bam. Energy infrastructure, get it out. Or sell it to the European level, to the EIB in a debt for equity swap. That's very easy to be done. And it's also easy to be done to strengthen the state monopoly commission or the competition agency of Slovenia, however it's called. And here to really make a lot of pressure that this is happening. These are the good fights to do, and also then also to show, look that the enlargement is going on. That's a big battle, because Slovenia will now take anyhow also the presidency of the European Union after Portugal. So here is an important contribution to make, and not to spoil all this opportunity to become prime minister of Slovenia now with petty fights with some not very relevant European parliamentarians from lucky Netherlands who want to look for a second Orban to fight. And indeed, this comparison is also completely outdated because Orban is a Russian asset. He went fully in with Putin. That Janša never did. He didn't make any dirty deals with Putin. He didn't do any pro-Russian, anti-Ukrainian activity. He was not complicit with Putin's criminal networks, nor with his murders. And he has not built a nuclear power station in Slovenia, but in Hungary, Rosatom. So let's not mix up the issues. It's definitely Orban who should be hammered for all his things he did with Russia. And it's not Janša. And Janša must be focused on the reforms, on the enlargement, to make a successful Slovenian presidency, make sure there is significant support from him, from Germany, from Austria, from Italy as well, and from Croatia, to get Bosnia the candidate status and Kosovo the candidate status, to prepare the membership of Macedonia, of North Macedonia, Albania, Montenegro in this mandate. That's really good. And get the EU potential candidate status for Ukraine, Moldova and Georgia. This is the historic mission of the dissident opposition leader, Mr. Janša, to really contribute to European Union enlargement and also to a very strong, serious, successful European Union. And this is also the way to reform Slovenia, to get this international recognition and attention by then also selling some state assets and also making sure that the taxes are lower and that Slovenia is focused on competitiveness. And then also then to build the necessary infrastructure which is missing in Slovenia, to sell some of these state infrastructure companies which Slovenia has, and then to get going. This is the way for European Slovenia, and not this petty kind of fights about the past, whenever some is really justified, some maybe not. I'm not an investigative journalist, but it's time to really focus on the key reforms of taxation, state companies, privatization and enlargement. And this will be the level of historic achievement required for such a historic personality as Mr. Janez Janša. Good for European Slovenia. Thanks a lot for listening and visit the sunny side of the Alps. It's a beautiful country. I miss it. I would like to go there very soon, back again. And best regards to all my friends from Slovenia.